Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Nicole Thomas, Vice President of Information Services for McKinney Flavelle. And today is May 21st, 2021. And welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast. And I have one of the most knowledgeable people on the planet about how speculators behave in the futures markets.
I'm glad you qualified that.
Hey, there. I can't imagine that there is a piece of knowledge that more of our listeners would not appreciate right now than that. And so you heard his voice, Sean Bingham, the director of risk management for McKinney Flavelle. Welcome to the podcast, Sean.
Thank you very much.
See, I don't have as much practice with this stuff as Mike does. So,
speaking of Mike,
yeah,
our fearless leader.
Yes,
today is his birthday, I believe.
It is his birthday, so everyone should send him just the meanest. No, I'm just kidding. Send him the most hilarious happy birthday to his email address. I'm sure you have it, and brighten up his day for his birthday.
Yeah, blow him up. You know what is interesting on this day?
What's that?
Just looking real quick, and you being from St. Louis may know this.
Okay.
On this day in 1927, Charles Lindbergh solo flew across the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh yeah, we've got a street named after him.
Yes, you do.
So, and, you know, kind of big deal.
And you know what else is interesting? And I didn't know this. This is kind of new to me too. 6 years later is when Amelia Earhart did the exact same thing to the day.
So we were busy with airplanes in that time frame, huh?
Well, at least, well, it was 19. He did, Lindbergh did it in 27. She did it in 32, actually, 5 years later. So,
cool.
But yeah, just a little piece. And that's for you, Mike. A little piece. If you don't already know that, now you do. You can say, on my birthday, we navigated the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of a big deal. You know, what's funny is as you're talking about that, I was having a conversation with some friends about the dumbest thing you did as a kid. And so we're speaking about flying. For me, it was using a sit-up ramp or a sit-up bench as a bike ramp. I do not recommend anyone do that, but,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. You know, and Pete says we always get off topic on these things. I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I mean, we're talking about flight, and now we're going to talk about commodity markets. I don't you see the link? I see the link.
I think that's probably what people are more interested in.
Well, speaking of those commodity markets, if you've been following them, we've had some very interesting activity on the markets. Oh, maybe over the last couple of weeks here, I would say a little since the WASD report, and this time, this activity has made buyers of commodities smile, mm-hmm. And we haven't been able to say that for a while. And usually, I'm quite depressing with my commentary. So, what we're going to talk about today is exactly what's happening from a speculative position standpoint. And take a look at, you know, this pretty massive liquidation we've seen of late. And I guess that leads to the perfect first question for you, Sean. What happened? How do we get here?
Well, I think when we look back on that last WASD day, it really wasn't bearish.
Right.
But it wasn't bullish for the first time in a long time. And I think that was enough that a lot of folks in the market said, you know what? We've got some pretty good profits in this trade. Maybe it's time to start unwinding. And when we saw the last look at spec interest, and we'll get another one today around 2:30 my time, that was where the big liquidations hit was corn, and they took out about 50,000 contracts during that last week. So it'll be really. I don't think we're going to see that this week, just because open interest isn't quite indicating that. Unless commercials are really picking up the other side, you know, on, you know, opposite way. So, big liquidations, I think not necessarily on bearish news, but not on any more bullish news. And then I think the other thing interesting going on this week, at least certainly in corn, China's bought a whole lot of corn here recently. And
yes,
and corn is going down. So as the ex-trader in me, you know, those kind of divergences mean something. I think there's something to be said when if you had told me 2 weeks ago, you know, China was going to buy, they're up to like 12 million bushels or something like that now, or metric tons.
That last purchase was over a million, so that was pretty significant.
Yeah, I mean, and this is like the fourth or fifth, you know, in the last 2 weeks. So if you had told me that and then told me corn was going to be lower, I would have said, oh, I don't even think that's possible. So I think there's a shift in the market. We're seeing it in all the momentum indicators are all heading south. Matter of fact, they're at some of the lowest levels we've seen for, you know, over a month or two in corn, soybean, and wheat. So it's not just corn. It's definitely some buyer exhaustion up here trickling through the markets.
Well, you know, that brings up another good question, Sean. Mm-hmm. Is this an indication of a change in the short term or the long term? Do you think we got a trend change, or should we view this as kind of a correction and maybe an opportunity?
Yeah, maybe a little of everything there. Wheat was the first to, at least according to our systematic models, my short term systematic models, wheat was the first to turn what you might call bearish or bearish neutral on May 13th when we crossed under 694. We have seen the December corn contract more recently do the same thing on May 17th when it crossed under 537. And the front month contract has still held out. But, you know, so we're seeing the first signs of some at least short term trend changes in the grain market. But we're not anywhere close in terms of long term. And what I look at is when I'm talking short term, I'm generally looking at technical stuff from the daily data, daily bars. Mm-hmm. And then when I talk long term, I like to look at the weekly data, and because the weekly data tends to, you know, expand everything out. So week data wise, we're not going to see a trend change. Let's look at the December contracts, December wheat. I don't see a long-term trend change there until we cross under $6. And in corn, December, that's down about $4.50, which I think most people would say, what are the odds we're even going to get to $4.50 corn before the December expiration? So
yeah.
So then in a nutshell, definitely some short-term momentum and trend changes across corn, soybeans, or corn and wheat, and maybe even soybeans here soon. Long term, not even close.
Gotcha. What about my bean oil? My bean oil buyers.
Okay,
they're worried. What we got?
So bean oil is the rocket ship that everybody knows about.
Yes.
I don't even have a short term signal change in bean oil until we get basically to 50 cents.
Oh wow.
Per pound.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a ways away, and then long term, 43 cents. Ooh. So yeah, yeah. Now, obviously, if we were just to track sideways for a few months, all that data will end up, you know, moving up higher. But for now, you know, there's not any major reason that the speculators that tend to be longer term should be bailing on any of this. Now, we're definitely seeing some short term money come out.
Yep.
But are we at levels that is going to turn these guys, completely liquidate out of this, or maybe even go short? We're not anywhere near this. So, you know, when you talk about, is this a major sea change, or maybe just an opportunity to start taking some coverage on some of this stuff? I think it falls in the opportunity camp. And of course, I'd love to get your fundamental view of that as well.
Yeah, you know, I, of course, with bean oil in particular, and certainly for corn as well, I think, you know, from a fundamental standpoint, not much has changed, but with the exception of, you know, the planting pace has been pretty good. The weather outlook, you know, doesn't appear to be ominous at this point. And of course, we're all waiting with bated breath for the acreage report at the end of June. Mm-hmm. To kind of give us an indication of what we've got for total acreage. And yeah, that certainly could be impactful. But I think, you know, you kind of look at the demand scenario, what's going on with Brazil and South America, and then from a commercial market for soybean oil and oils in general, but particularly for soybean oil and the demand that exists there, there's nothing that points towards a bearish scenario. So, you know, I tend to align with you here, Sean, that this may be more of an opportunity to not only look at, you know, sort of the December contract or anything remaining for 2021. I mean, if you have something left for 2021, you definitely have to jump on this. Mm-hmm. But to also start looking a little further out to 2022 and coming up with, you know, some levels that would warrant giving some serious consideration to extending coverage. Now, you know, from a fundamental standpoint, there's you know, obviously quite a few things to consider in that regard. But a question for you as it relates to sort of establishing those points is, you know, from, you mentioned that where levels are today, there's, you know, not necessarily a reason for all this spec money to leave the market. Where sort of, where do these guys get in and what sort of picture develops in terms of, you know, what might get them a little intrigued to take this further and do some profit taking or some additional profit taking, I guess I should say.
So I know a lot of folks monitor spec positions, but what most people don't do is keep track of where they actually own those positions. And that's one thing I watch very, very carefully. It hasn't really been much of an issue here recently, just because, for example, if you look at corn, the speculators got on this last bull run in corn long, and I will preface that by saying when I say that they've actually turned long, what I do is I look at their net positions, futures and options, mm-hmm. and then I subtract out the index money that is kind of that long only money. There's a few different ways you can do it, but I like to do it that way. You take out that index money, and that leaves you with what I call their true positions. Mm-hmm. Those turned bullish back in September of 20.
Wow.
And they were heavy, heavy buyers all through September, all through October. It wasn't even, no, we didn't even see our first even near liquidation of corn until the beginning of November from when they started buying. Now we've had some, you know, cycles now up and down with all that. But like I said, last week we had almost 52,000 contracts come out of corn. What is interesting is when you break every one of those weeks down and you look at where the market was during that time frame, you can put a pretty good idea. You get a pretty good idea of what price that activity was happening.
All right.
And then if you just use a simple weighted method on how much they did and at what price, it can give you a pretty close estimate of where they own these positions. And for corn, and obviously speculators are generally in the front contract, so I'm talking right. July here. For corn, they are long at about 470. So they they are way below the market, below the market. Now, it's not the case for some of these other products, but at least, and certainly not for soybeans, they're much tighter. But in corn, they have, you know, I guess you can look at this two ways. One, they're in zero danger of getting underwater on this trade.
Yeah,
so exactly. there's not a whole lot of reason to scramble out. But at the same time, they've got big, big profits in these. And I don't think any of those want to see, I mean, they've already seen about a 10% reduction in their profits just in the last, you know, week and change.
All right.
Are they going to see more of that erode? Probably not. So, and that's kind of that, at least with July corn, that you get under that 630 level, which we're been pretty close. You know, we got pretty close a couple times, not quite there. We get under there. And I think even though they, it's not, you know, not anywhere near pushing them underwater, they're going to start taking profits on this stuff pretty soon. Now, soybeans, they're a lot tighter. I think you're definitely interested in soybean oil.
All right.
So soybean oil, let me just pull this up really quick. Hang on a second. Soybean oil, they still have some pretty decent profits here. I've got them long at about 47 and a quarter.
Oh, wow.
Specs. So, and in this case, they were buyers a little bit earlier than corn. I had them coming into the market in about July of last year.
Right.
What's interesting is they were never really heavy, heavy buyers like they were in the corn market. It was really kind of scattered and in and out of the market. So what's interesting, they've really never built huge positions up in soybean oil. Now, part of that is that they just don't trade as much soybean oil as they will corn, soybean, or wheat. But still,
right,
even relative to what we've seen in the past, the positions never got more than about 80-ish thousand. Actually, I think the high was around 90,000 contracts. What I call the true net. So deducting from that index money, long and they've liquidated most of what they bought early. I would say all the positions that the speculators have now on average, obviously not everybody on average, they probably own from the beginning of this year. So
gotcha.
Yeah. So if you kind of add up the average price between, from the beginning of the year, to here recently, that gets you that 47 cent area. So they got a long way to go.
About 20 cents.
Yeah. They got a long
way
to go.
I would say that's pretty good. Yeah.
I'd say they got some decent profits there. And so where is that level that they're probably going to start taking profits? I mean, gosh, this market's just, there's so little support for this market because it's been just going straight up.
Right. Right.
But I would say at least my systematic model is putting that support right around 58.5 cents in the July contract. So we get underneath that. I think the specs will probably start liquidating fairly, liquidating what they have. And then you've got the 100-day moving average right around 52.5. And that would certainly press them to sell even more. But boy, you can tell me. I don't know what the funnel is.
I'm sitting here thinking, we get into July. We start getting low on beans. We get a little pressure on crush. Oil production comes down a little bit. And we're already tight with a lot of demand. Maybe worthwhile for them to hold on to that one and see what they're going to get in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I don't see soybean oil under 54.50 anytime in the near future. I think we'd have to have some kind of fundamental event that really changed the picture. I don't know, maybe huge acreage swing into soybeans. I don't know, but I don't know why we would see. It seems to me like it's all going to corn right now. And that's mainly an issue for it's just cheaper to carry corn. If farmers are the way farmers are looking at it, it's really all about cost to carry for them. And so if it's even a 50-50 coin flip between corn and soybeans, they're going to choose corn every time.
They're going to choose corn.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, oil buyers. I was trying to get us to end on a good note here for you. But, we got to tell you what's really going on. And, we'll work through it. We're working through it together.
Yeah.
We'll sit in therapy together. How about that?
Well, I mean, the good news is we are seeing weakness.
Right.
Corn, soybeans, and wheat. So, and soybean meal, I should throw that in there too. So at least it's not a head, a tailwind for soybean oil anymore.
Right.
Now exactly. Now it's got to fight a little bit or swim a little bit upstream from here on out. So, maybe the best we can ask on soybean oil is it just stops going higher.
Yeah. I think I would be content with that.
Yeah,
I'm easy to please. I don't need much more than that. I'm pretty confident most oil buyers feel the same way at this point. Let's just give us a pause. Can you give us a pause? Let us catch our breath, and we can feel a little better about this whole scenario.
Absolutely.
Well, Great podcast as always, Sean. And thank you for all the insightful information. It's really good to see the world from that perspective. That one's a lot less transparent, and something that I think, you know, as we've watched all this volatility in the market, is definitely given us some heightened interest. I'll put it that way. Mm-hmm. And speaking of, we offer a service that gives you this type of information and more, including buy signals to kind of help you establish where to, you know, kind of dip your toe into the market for commodity futures. So if you'd like to learn more about that, please reach out to us at Inquire, Inquire, at McKinney-Flavelle.com. And we'll get you in touch with Sean to discuss how you can make systematic modeling work for you. So
absolutely. It's working for the speculators.
It's definitely working for the speculators. So why not let it work for you too? Come
exactly.
on. Don't let them have all the fun.
Yeah.
Well, I think that wraps up our weekly Hot Commodity Podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening in. Happy birthday, Michael, because I know you're going to listen to this to make sure Sean and I did not talk too poorly about you today. And as Mike always says, live with an attitude of gratitude. Until next time, take care.
Goodbye, everybody.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Flavelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Flavelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.